You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
The Boss Hog of Liberty podcast is the latest hit on the We Are Libertarians Network. Each week, Jeremiah Moreland and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana.
It's a show about our circle of friends, public officials, and our experiences. 80% observation, life, humor, and 20% politics. Boss Hog of Liberty is the day-to-day happenings of Henry County, Indiana, which is just like your community. Add us on iTunes and sample us today.
Dear Leader would want you to.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
Hey, Liberty Rockers, this is Johnny Rocket from the Johnny Rocket Launchpad. Each week, I strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, economists, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check it out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com or find us on iTunes. Each show is action-packed, explicit, and a lot of fun. So join me at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com every week for the newest episode. Keep liberty alive and rock and roll.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Don't like us on Facebook. Join our email newsletter. And subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content and free stuff. One person wrote in and said, do you think that you giving me more things to listen to is really going to get me into the program? Yes. She's like, I can't keep up as it is. Listen, I'm a one-man content machine. I can't stop. Can't stop. Gotta keep going. Gotta keep pushing this out there. You need it more now than ever before, and I need your support. And that is what the Patreon is really about, you supporting independent media. And this whole show will be about how much you need to support independent media. But if you give us $5, $10, $25, $100 a month as a subscriber, we give you some cool stuff. Go check out the rewards at patreon.com/weirdlibertarians.com. And this show is crowdsourced, so you can send us news with the hashtag WAL News or in our Facebook group and Discord channel. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. My name is Chris Spangle. I am the host and dear leader of We Are Libertarians. And joining me for the first time in a couple weeks is Harry Price. Harry, how are you?
I'm going great. I have been missed sitting in this chair, sitting behind this microphone.
It's always funny when we've had a break and we haven't seen each other for a couple weeks. Harry mm-hmm. comes back so chatty, and he reminds me so much of my sister, who's a stay-at-home mom, spends all day with a 2- and 4-year-old, and I go over there to hang out with my nieces, and Jessica talks a lot. And I totally get it, because especially when Lorelai was a baby and Lorelai couldn't talk, mm-hmm. that's when Jessica talked the most, because she was like, I need human interaction. So like being a stay-at-home parent is way harder than I think people realize.
Yeah.
And so you showed up here. You showed up, what, an hour early almost?
Yeah, an hour. Yeah.
And you are ready to chat, buddy.
Yeah, I've been at home sick. I haven't been going out, so usually I go out to least Liberty and chill, or go out and see people. But I'm a respectable person, unlike some of you people that do, you know, go out
whoa,
and get sick.
Whoa.
You know who you
people.
Are. Yeah, you people, you know who you are. You go out sick and cough on things.
Right.
Oh, I just got a fever. I'm just 103. I'm just gonna go to the bar. No, stay at home. Drink NyQuil like a normal person. Stay at home. Put yourself in a self-induced coma like I do. That's a vodka plus NyQuil.
Christy Avery is glaring at Rick in the chat. Why is that? Did Rick show up to a Liberty and chill sick?
Possibly.
Who knows? Nobody needs you to be a hero.
Yeah.
Stay at home. I'm not talking to Rick. I'm talking to anybody who's sick. Don't go to work sick. We don't need you.
Right.
You're not that important at your job.
Yeah, no one's that important.
Right.
Unless you're Michael Jordan. Then you can show up with the flu.
Yeah. Like Donald Trump, take a week or year off. Like, it's fine. If you're sick, just stay home.
Yes. Yeah.
Lots to talk about this week. I'm cranky today. Full disclosure, I've taken SSRIs for about 17 years, and I'm transitioning off of them. So if I seem extra cranky lately, that's why. And today is going to be no exception, because I am raging at liberals, I'm raging at boomers, and I've got a lot to say, and you people are going to hear about it.
Uh-oh.
But this is the first Tuesday show in a while. I'm almost out of practice. We've not really done our typical news dump. Mm-hmm. It's been like almost a month since we've really done a news dump show. So I was out of practice and I sat down this morning and I was like, you know what? I want some suggestions. I haven't really followed the news. It's been kind of nice to take a little break and not read 2 hours of news every day. Wonder what the audience wants to hear about. And if you didn't hear it in the last episode, we are libertarians. We're trying to build community. We are trying to help you gain more friends. We know you're an introvert, you're a libertarian, and you need friends. And we have devised a set of Facebook groups for you to join in. We'd love for you to join them. Just go to the search tab and type in WAL. Most of them will come up. You can join. Or go to our Facebook page and click the groups tab, and you'll see all the different ones there. But if you join the main group, then you kind of get the vibe there. So in the main group, I put up a poll. I love the poll feature. Here's what you need to understand, We Are Libertarians Facebook group, the We Are Libertarians Ministry of Friendship and News. I think it's news. It's got a North Korean title. That's the main group. It's 1,400 people in there. When I ask a poll question group, I'm serious. I want actual answers, because there's a reason I'm asking the question.
It's the Ministry of Propaganda and Friendship.
Thank you. I never get a serious answer. Nobody ever gives me serious answers. Why do people not take me seriously, Harry?
Some of these are very serious and hard-hitting questions that need to be answered. Other time is just people's opinions and people really want to feel. You know?
I created my own misery by attracting a group of shitposters as an audience, and I love it. But these made me laugh. The topic suggestions for tonight... According to our Facebook group, here's what they'd like us to discuss.
Dead serious question. Dead serious.
Anime girls with guns will make liberty great again. You like the Asian cartoons.
Yep.
The pending uprising of the South, in which society will inevitably change, where liberals are thrown into gulags and a harmonious society is produced. That's actually kind of the theme for tonight. So we're kind of doing that. Gen Z. Going to talk to a couple Gen Zers. It's funny. There's the Chris Spangle show out there. And a lot of stuff about creation and creating things. And one of the podcasts that is in there is a Q&A session with two high school kids who are starting their own podcasts. And the girls, Sarah and Courtney, they said, can we come on We Are Libertarians? And I said, I said jokingly, no, hit me up when you're 18 and then you can come on. Otherwise, it's probably not legal. And mm-hmm. I said it joking.
Yeah.
Sort of joking. Because, like, mm-hmm. I don't need 17-year-old high school girls. I don't want anything to do with you. What do you have to add to society in the first place?
Then you look at Logan Paul's analytics.
Right, exactly. And so Sarah hit me up on Twitter yesterday. She said, Courtney and I are 18 as of tomorrow. Can we come on the podcast? So, Sarah actually has a couple really cool podcasts. So I may have them on and explain Gen Z to us old people. So that's a valid topic. Matt Geiger suggested that. Very smart young man, editor of 71 Republic. Go check that out. Make bombs illegal in Austin. I agree with this. I think bombs should be illegal in Austin. There should be no bombings in Texas anymore. Yes, I don't want any 17-year-old high school girls, Rick, because I don't want to attract more Arvins to the party. See, the best thing about being a $10 a month subscriber to We Are Libertarians is you get access to the chat during the live show. Mm-hmm. Some of these people are really funny. All right, interstate secession, so tearing states apart. I'm a fan. I honestly am at the point where we just give California and New York, or just California and like Arizona, California, Oregon, and Washington, and then we just laser saw that off and push it off into the ocean and say, don't come back, and in 10 years when you're all starving, don't ask for immigration. Why the Free State Project needs an Indian guru with hypnotic powers to be successful. I was not aware that's what they need.
It's fair. There's no spice up in the Great White North of New Hampshire.
That's right. Not a curry to be found.
Curry or spicy food. I went to the Mexican restaurant in Keene, and like the salsa tasted like marinara sauce. You know, I was like, oh, what is this? I looked back in the kitchen to the the Hispanics walking there. It's like, compasón. Hook me up. Come on, I got this.
I will be attending Pork Fest, and I will be attending the National Libertarian Convention. I've been able to make those plans, so
it'll be spicy for you.
It'd be very spicy. Mayonnaise is spicy. All right, why do we drive in a parkway but park in a driveway? What's the deal? Is Cheeto a chip? Cheeto is absolutely a chip. There is no doubt in my mind.
No,
yes, Cheeto
not.
Is a chip.
No, it's Stop not. Being it is silly. Not a chip.
It is absolutely
it is
a chip.
Yes. It's more of a puff.
No.
It's a crisp puff.
It is
but
a chip.
It's not a chip.
It's a chip.
Is pork rinds a chip then? No. Pork rind is not a chip.
Yes. Why do you think they're called potato chips?
It's different. It's
because you can have
they're
corn
chip.
Chips.
Chips. Pork rinds aren't chips.
It is a...
So Cheese Puffs aren't chips.
No, it is a portable delivery device. You put your hand in a bag, you put your fat hand in a bag, and you pull out a chip and you eat it.
No. Nope.
Absolutely a chip.
No.
You're being ridiculous.
So is non-bread chip? Because that's a delivery device for hummus.
No, that's tortilla.
Oh, what?
Tortilla
chips. So it's different. Dude, no. It's different. So non-bread... This is,
please.
I could really go...
I want you to... Tweet at us at We Are Libertarians. We are the letter R Libertarians. Let us know if Cheeto's a chip. How to purge our party of everyone we don't like. Basically, that's every episode of We Are Libertarians. One that did make the list that we will be talking about later. Each other in a buddy cop movie, high speed chase, culminating in a shootout with foreign drug dealers. So we'll kind of be getting to that in a little bit. But yeah, lots of good suggestions. But, Harry, you've chosen the first subject. You're still mad about the Cheeto.
I'm mad at the Cheeto thing. I'm just like...
No, Cheeto's absolutely, without a doubt, a chip.
Yeah, the only other... I think that might be
It's a portable snack device in a bag.
I think for the next 2 weeks, that might be my new obsession. But my past obsession for the last 2 weeks has been on Russia, and namely everything at the deal leading up to, one, this past election that happened... Technically, two nights ago, but because of the where Russia is, it's technically like three nights ago, because time zones and time
right.
zones are stupid.
Time zones are theft.
But anyways, so Putin went for election to become president for the next another for four more years. Is it four?
Well, here, I can read the story, give you some context here. From the Washington Post, Putin's reelection takes him one step closer to becoming Russian leader for life. He got a victory in a new six-year term as president, but most of his visible allies quickly signaled that they saw it as a mandate for something greater than that, leader of the Russian people, rising above politics at a time when the country's very existence is threatened by an aggressive West. The road to presidency for life or some other kind of lifetime post as the country's leader opened today, an independent political analyst. The Constitution would bar Putin from running again in 2024, but for months there's been growing speculation that Putin will change the Constitution or create a new office that would turn him into a supreme national leader like the Ayatollah Khomeini. So, yeah, he's well on his way to being a dictator.
I doubt it. I think you'd probably hold it over everyone's head or get rid of the rule just to scare people and probably not even run because it's, you know, it's classic, would be classic Putin. Because the technically he's been in power since the 2000s, but he was technically their former the vice president in, was it 08, I want to say it was, where he took the back seat.
Well, he was president in 2000. He took over for Boris Yeltsin, who stepped down.
Correct.
Transitioned to Putin, and Putin for the next 12 years was president, and then Dmitry Medvedev was the president, and Putin served as prime minister, and basically, or maybe I have that, yeah, he was prime minister. And it is, it's like the vice president role, but it's more internal, and the president is the leader that is in the outfacing world. Prime minister is internal, essentially, in some of these different federations.
Yeah, of the Russian Federation. And the main thing people like to bring up about Putin is like, he was an ex-KGB colonel, and he served in a post in East Germany, and he's what's always famous for burning a lot of KGB documents in the basement. So basically it's like, see, he was just like, no, he was, you know, he was a good mailman. You know, he did his job. But now I'm going to get crap for calling him a mailman. But anyways, he did his job. He burnt documents. He shredded stuff.
Yeah.
He did what he was supposed to do.
During the fall of the Berlin Wall, he was in Dresden, I think it was.
In Germany.
And he burned all the papers, and he supposedly wept as the Berlin Wall came down, but for the opposite reason of why we wept.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's also supposedly. He wept for, like, no, in a way, some people could say because he was losing his job, didn't know, but the people thinking that he really, like, you know, he's a massive communist socialist, no, he's just a big statist, just like most people who are in power. But, like, the thing is, he's been running on the whole election of the idea of that everyone is versus Russia. Everyone hates us. Look how they treat us. We didn't do anything to them.
Right.
The biggest form of democracy in the world has said that we have been meddling in their elections. We've meddled in their election that we pick, you know, we helped pick their leader, Trump, because we celebrated someone's victory.
Right.
You know, and so, but they're coming after us. They say we're going after them. And they were like, oh, we didn't do anything. We didn't do nothing wrong. And Hillary's campaign was already poking and prodding and help build Putin's case of, like, you know, look, she's threatening to shoot down our planes. It's part of his election campaign. Anyway, so in the past 2 weeks, what happened, like, there was like the leading into his campaign, which was also weird with it, that we had the assassination attempt in Russia. Let me pull up my... Sorry, I am on my Chromebook. I don't have my laptop. My laptop is still out because my SSD died on Friday.
He's on a Chromebook, and I asked him, I'm sorry, when did you become poor? And I didn't realize, I knew you were going back to school, but not middle school. And then I continued to mock him mercilessly, just as he mocks me for having Mac products. And you know what? 2013, bought this MacBook Pro. No issues. Weird, isn't it?
So, it was the SSD that died. The laptop is perfectly fine. It was the SSD, and then stupid Amazon Prime didn't two-day me. I got it.
What?
My Amazon Prime two-day became Amazon five-day.
I hate when they're through third-party sellers and, like, ugh.
But it said Prime. It said Prime. This is a Prime item.
Rick asked in the chat, how jealous do you think Trump is? Do you think that Trump would want to become more than a two-term president? Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump has, if he were allowed to be president for life, he absolutely would. He has every hallmark of if you read the book on tyranny, it's like basically 21 lessons on tyranny, and it just outlines it all perfectly. I just read a book called The Dictator's Handbook, and Trump ticks all those marks. He's an authoritarian person who has constraints within the American system, because the American system fundamentally will always, hopefully, reject an authoritarian like Donald Trump, like Vladimir Putin, like Xi Jinping. So I have no doubt that he has those desires. I just don't think that the American system would allow that. I think you know, I don't know, though.
No.
We are so anti-intellectual, and we are going down such a dangerous path, as we'll outline once we get to the next subject, that it's pretty scary. But yes, I do think Donald Trump is one of those folks who would want to be an authoritarian. He wants his personal desires. He treats everyone around him as if they are all servants to him. I mean, he's the exact opposite of, you know, George Bush. No matter what you think of him, George Bush at least talked about how he was the lead servant and his job was to serve the people. And there was a lot of rhetoric in the Bush administration about servant leadership. And that's the total opposite of Donald Trump, where it's you all exist to do what I want you to do or else I will fire you. And that's why you have such a high turnover, because they're trying to do what the Constitution or what, you know, their predecessors or what laws that have been passed or Supreme Court rulings have said that these executive branch members ought to do, and it conflicts with his own little worldview, and so he fires them. I mean, up next is H.R. McMaster to be replaced with the frightening John Bolton. This we'll get to the CIA transition later. She's a scary lady. Ryan Zinke, I think he's Interior. He's on the hot seat. That Scott Pruitt at the EPA is on the hot seat. He's, you know, and these are people. I've almost got the cabinet I want. Well, dude, you pick these people, so you got the cabinet you wanted because you picked them. So it's you go and read the Fire and Fury book now. It's like a completely different group of people in the White House a year later. The Fire and Fury book is completely irrelevant. And it came out in January. We were talking about in Fire and Fury in January, and it was relevant. It's not anymore. Like, that's how crazy this guy is. So back to Putin.
Anyway, so where was I? The poison of the Russian spy that happened in Salisbury in the UK.
Right.
That happened around, what is it? Well, today's Tuesday. So about 2 weeks ago. And the thing that's always like crazy about this ex KGB spy, he turned over to MI6 in the '80s, mm-hmm. and gave up information about different Russian spies to the British intelligence and became an asset of theirs.
Right.
But he defected, stayed in the UK. You know, so all the information that he had is '80s past.
Right.
And then here in 2018, you know, he was an assassination attempt put onto him. And the manner that someone was using was a nerve gas agent.
Right.
Which is a nerve gas agent that they known to be used and created by the Soviet Union era Russian government to take this guy out. The thing, and then the UK responded in kind, expelling diplomats and forcing sanctions on the Russian government. So this is 2 weeks right before the election. So that spurs a lot of other people to like, look, they're coming after us without any proof. Russia has denied all the allegations of this poisoning, which personally is the great thing because there hasn't been a use of chemical weapons in Europe since World War II. So you've got this one bit case bops up in 2018.
Right.
And the thing that is crazy and all the allegations and all the conspiracy theories and stuff that goes through it, because the thing that doesn't make any sense is why the Russian government would use a nerve agent to poison somebody, to take somebody out. Because the way they released the gas, it was more of like, because most of the time when they have poison or shown poison like polonium X or all the other poisons that possibly the Kremlin has used, it's been very targeted. It's one person took one person out. This thing was a gas agent that took not only himself out but his daughter, and it hit the police officer that that ran into it, that went there to help. So they had to even put a tent and clean up that. They had to clean up the town where they were meeting at, everywhere is at. So it was very, it's almost like very sloppy the way they released it. It just said screw it and just kind of released it everywhere.
Right.
They even had to back block off where his they haven't. I don't think they released a report because they are supposedly not pulling out the bodies of his dead sons, but they're pulling the bodies out of his dead sons to also probably look for poisonings and stuff like that. Because it is not unusual for, in the past, of the Ukrainian and the Russian government, that type of that part of Europe, Asia, to use poison in political matters. It's very.
Was it Viktor Yushchenko, the former president of the Ukraine? He lived.
Yes,
and lived. Is permanently disfigured with pockmarks and scars all over his face.
Correct.
The spy who died in Britain. Mm-hmm. I remember the picture of him in the hospital bed with the bald head. I don't know his name, but I mean, it's very. It happens all the time in Russia too. All these journalists keep turning up dead
and poisoned.
Yeah. It's the go to for the Putin regime.
Yeah, and it was the poison you're talking about that one had done in Britain was polonium X, which was a radioactive type of poison, and they've been able to trace that back all the way back to Russia just because of the radioactive, because it left a radiation point everywhere it went to, everywhere it touched. So the teapot, the bathroom where they took it to, on the airplane, they traced it all the way back. They could basically follow the entire path because this thing was radiating on so many other things, leaving radiation substances everywhere. It was just like, okay, this thing went here. They even noticed that they did an earlier attempt and failed and gave up and poured it down the back and down the sink in the hotel room.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. But they could kind of say it was Russia because they found out, okay, these guys came from Russia. That's how they came in, and they have sort of ties, but the Russian government still didn't like, oh yeah, that was us. Yeah, we poisoned and took this guy out.
Right.
You know, and they also have grainy footage of it. But, and they barely figured it out because they were about a day into burying this guy before they realized this guy was dying from radiation sickness.
Right.
It was a day from it. They were going to put this guy on the ground because they didn't know what he's dying from. Then someone finally noticed with radiation sickness. So that was that one. So you could say that, okay, maybe they thought no one would catch this thing. And they were, because there almost was like a day ahead, but there was. So you would think the lessons learned from that case, right? If they went to go poison someone else, they would, the Russian state would probably do a better job of cleaning its tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole conspiracy, you're sitting looking at this thing. So either the Russian government snubbed its nose at UK law, the European Union, and everybody, and every tie that they've had to nerve gas agents to take out a spy that hasn't been relevant for 20 plus years.
Right.
Just to get back old debts, old Cold War debts.
Right.
Which they have. But the thing is, what's easier? Sneak some nerve agent into the UK or put a bullet in this guy? Or sneak a gun in and put a bullet in this guy? And then they're like, well, they wanted to make him suffer. The Russian government perfected the Curare poison. Mm-hmm. They were the one who's perfected it. Granted, they got it from out in Vietnam. They got it from out there, from using it out there. But the Russian government popularized it and got it weaponized it.
Right.
Granted, it was weaponized, but they made it better and made it better delivery system. They made a better delivery system for all kinds of different poisons. So the arsenal was huge to be able to enact all kinds of different poisons on this guy to really make him suffer, and the idea of using a nerve agent just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Other than then either they snubbed their nose or they lost control of a chemical agent.
Or it wasn't them.
Right, or it wasn't Russia.
Right.
Either they lost control, really did it, or it wasn't them. Because the only other person, there's two other, you can go to the conspiracy speculation of the people that could possibly pull this off. MI6 could possibly pull this off to make it look like Russia. The other people that could do it would be CIA. Like if you had some, I don't know, it's like some dark CIA person that's coming into the light right now to come out, coming from the background, coming forward that wants a role in Russia, that decided to use their deep state contact to put this out there to give a better boogeyman.
Yeah, so I think a lot of what's happening and a lot of what this story and the next story and the Russia collusion and the spying and the assets trying to infiltrate the Trump administration and all of this is, and all the stuff that we've learned about the Hillary Clinton campaign, all of this is how politics really works.
Mm-hmm.
This is how geopolitics works. This is how governments operate. And this is why libertarians are consistently saying that government is a cancer that needs to be removed from society,
mm-hmm.
because this is how they behave. And they do it in secret, and they can make their own rules, and they can punish whomever they like, and they can kill whomever they like and cover it up. And, maybe that stuff doesn't happen in America, but it happens in a sophisticated, near superpower like the Russian government, and they get away with it. And, it happens in China, it happens in third world countries, and it probably happens here. And that's why people are so suspect of the deaths of people like Seth Rich and Michael Hastings, because we go, something's not right here. So,
right.
So that's why we're really suspect about this stuff, because this is just how all of it works, and we're just now finally getting to see it thanks to the internet age, thanks to the tools that we've created as a society to bring this stuff to light.
Yeah, like the whole people's like, that doesn't happen in modern politics. Like most people who've ever been involved in even like to me, like I've always, I remember when I first got the taste of it, like a small town politics of hearing about that in the internet age, because you know, the innocence of most, the small town politics are more dangerous than anything else. Because you get Boss Hog style people, not like Boss Hog Liberty, but like Boss Hog.
That's why we named him that.
Boss Hog style.
Not saying, you know, somebody hasn't been thrown in a gator pit in Henry County because they defied the Boss Hog of Liberty. I'm not saying that, but there may have been people fed to coyotes. I don't know.
Coyotes, maybe. snapping turtles.
Get your crap together, Helen. Hey Mary, stop arguing about the doughboy. You're next.
But small town politics is where like snap goes, just stuff goes on. Like I don't know, like some Lawrence mayor stealing someone's dog because they decided to go after, you know, started running in different, you know, challenges, or spreading rumors, stuff like that, getting people fired, or you know, if you run for any other office, going after most incumbents in Lawrence, code enforcement will be at your doorstep.
Right.
They will, you know, you're just automatically, oh, you got flagged.
Right.
You got flagged.
Right.
What? Code enforcement has never came over here on this side, you know, this side of Lawrence. They've never been over here. Now, oh, they're suddenly over here. You're expecting everything about your property. But, you know. But
start wrapping up on Russia because we got to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hit the time limits, but
all right, sorry. Back to Russia. Then, so like the whole, so the last 2 weeks has been like this whole like further sanctions on Russia, Russian demonizing. So it also helped with Putin's campaign. That has helped for the last 2 weeks. It also has helped the Putin's campaign to show like, look, the world's coming after us with no evidence. They're coming after us. We have offered to help, stuff like that, but we're still the bad man, boogeyman to all of us. So like that. So it has helped Putin win his political. Granted, he didn't need this whole poisoning.
Right.
The other thing is that you also notice with the whole Russian election is the gigantic margin that he has won. The second person being coming close to him was 11% was the Communist Party.
Right.
Ooh. But of course, when it comes down to it, you know, Putin or communism, that's not a hard choice.
Not really.
The other thing, the cool thing about the Russian election was that it was, you know, there were six different people that you could vote for. So come on, America, get with the times. Russia looks a little more freer in their, you know, presidential elections than America does.
Right.
But the thing is, the other thing, you can get on Live Leak and look at the videos. I put it on the trail, though. Maybe I'll throw it in the Discord or the chat, was to look at the cam footage, because Russians are very good about recording things. They're very, very good at recording because of all the different insurance scams.
It's incredibly corrupt in Russia, because in the days of the USSR, to get anything done in Russia, you had to bribe people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you got things done. And so they have a ton of cameras everywhere, body cameras, car cameras. That's why, like, if you remember that plane that went right over the interstate, or the comets that fall in Russia, it's always picked up on their car cameras. It's because of insurance scams, police being trying to bribe people. So they record everything there.
Everything. So during the election process, people were recording the ballot boxes. They had these clear boxes they were putting. Some videos show they had the clear ballot boxes. So they show people take their little, like, one single sheet of paper with their ballot, folding it up or doing what they do, and shoving in the ballot box. And it looked all pretty normal, pretty. Then the video fast forwards, right? And this guy zooms in on the ballot box. And there's just a stack, a perfectly flat stack, a thick stack of ballots sitting in there.
Right.
So either Russia decides to take all its absentee ballots or pre-filled out ballots from people, you know, oh, I can't make it that election day, and they put it all in at once in their live on the floor, or someone has stuffed some ballot boxes.
Right.
And then they've got other videos of people working at polling stations, waiting for other people to put votes in, and then they're shoving some other votes behind it. It's really weird getting on Live Leak and looking at some of the Russian election stuff.
Yeah, and we'll post that in the show notes so you can go and check out one of the Live Leaks that Harry put up there. Yep. On to our next subject.
Sorry, I'm going to go like 5 hours on Russia.
No, I know. Well, you have Loki Wall tomorrow night.
Yep.
Let's plug Loki Wall. That is through our Twitch channel. You can follow us on Twitch, we, the letter R, Libertarians, Harry manages that along with our Discord community, which you can join at wearelibertarians.com. And every Wednesday night, Harry hosts a fan chat for We Are Libertarians. He brings a stack of subjects, but you can join in too. So every night, 8-ish on Wednesday nights.
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock. I start the live stream around 7:45 just to let people know, like, hey, it's a 15-minute countdown. Some people get in the chat room and start talk. But, like, even if your level's high enough in the Discord chat, you can even jump into the voice chat there and actually talk and communicate and jump on the show. We actually get Stone jumps on a lot. Reinhold gets on. Escalage Applause gets on, and we all just get on and talk about different stories. And it's not unrealistic for a low-key wall to just get two new stories that come out of left field just from the chat. And it's usually great stories, and we cover about anything. And yes, I do tie them back to libertarianism, but, you know, just like everything. But everything comes out there. It's really,
yeah,
cool.
And the only way to get the audio of it is to be a Patreon subscriber, and then I take the audio and I put it into our private RSS feed that you get with all the bonus content. And those Twitch streams, they live for a couple weeks, but not for long. And then the only way to listen to the back catalog is to get that. And I found out that our RSS feed for this feed, the public feed, is being capped too at 300. So you can't get the first 50 episodes. So I will probably take that and put that behind the paywall as well, and put that stuff into the private RSS feed. So the only place to get that stuff, WeAreLibertarians.com, join Patreon. So Facebook and Twitter and YouTube are all full suicidal, and we should put them all on suicide watch because they're trying to kill themselves. They are trying to drive all of us away from their platforms, and they're doing a damn good job of it. And it's personally sad for me. I mean, to be honest, We Are Libertarians exist because of the amount of organic growth that I could get from these social networks for the first 10 years. Mm-hmm. The last 2 years, we've seen zero organic growth, almost no traffic back to our website from Facebook. Google now globally has passed Facebook as the official referrer. And it is sad to see these great tools of free speech that bring things like the Arab Spring to light start to give up on free speech, embrace censorship to please their friends on the left. And listen, I'm a decidedly fair-minded person. I'm somebody that tries to get the truth of a subject. I'm a person who wants to understand the world. I don't come at you with I am a libertarian. I have libertarian principles. I apply those to the news, but I'm also constantly questioning everything. And so I try to be fair-minded because sometimes the left and the right are right, and libertarians can learn some things from them. But in this case, I'm decidedly anti-left, because what the left has decided to do is create a false narrative and start to push that in an effort to regulate these social networks and punish these social networks and control thought and bend it towards them. And the media jumps on it and is complicit in it, because the media has never not held a grudge against big tech and these social networks for lifting their stuff. You know, if you remember the Google News fight several years ago, where content creators are going, hey, you're just putting your stuff on Google News, or you're just putting this on Facebook. And so what Facebook, Google, Apple, Amazon, what all these tech giants have always tried to do is to work with big media, to work with content creators, to work with government officials, and please them in an effort to keep regulations away from their business. We don't want regulations on big tech and social media, because we don't want that innovation to be stifled. Think of the millions of jobs that have been created because of big tech and the social networks and smartphones. 83%, according to new Edison research, there's something called the Infinite Dial research by Edison Research that studies podcasting, and they say 83% of people have a smartphone now. Think of all the amazing things that have happened because of the ability for us to get all this technology. A lot of bad things too. There's a lot of downside to all of this, but that's how it goes with any new technology. With any new technology, You have an upside and a downside. But innovation is stifled by regulation, and we are unfortunately about to see the regulation of Facebook and big tech, and it's solely because of political purposes. So for 2 years, we've been dealing with the term fake news and Russia and it and these bots that supposedly, you know, infest our politics. And they have taken the media and the left and Democrat politicians with the power of the government have taken it upon themselves to start demanding that these big platforms that should stand for free speech start censoring speech. You hear about, you vaguely hear in passing, you watch, like I was listening to Media, I think it's Media Gazer, it's a PBS outlet. And it's focused on media shift, I think it might be. But anyways, great outlet. You learn a ton from this guy. And I listened to his podcast, and they're talking about blockchain technology and how it can help news. And they start talking about how blockchain technology can free journalism and help protect from censorship by governments. And then literally the next discussion in it is how do you use blockchain to fight fake news? Well, one man's fake news is another man's truth. And that is the problem with this entire discussion is you are removing the agency and the autonomy of each reader to determine what is or is not news. The leaders of opinion pages, editors of newspapers and TV outlets, they are pissed that they no longer have control over how you think. And so they are using all of this quote-unquote crisis to their advantage to not only try and claw back revenue that they've lost and the control over our minds that they've lost. And I have repeatedly said on this program and on Facebook, if you don't stand up for the right of InfoWars to publish what they want to say, then you're going to lose your right pretty quickly. And we're there. And you didn't listen to me because y'all wanted to make the property rights argument. Yes, Facebook, Twitter, they all have the right to publish whatever they'd like to publish. They are a private business, and what happens on their server should happen on their server according to their whim. There is no doubt that that is the case. But that doesn't mean that you can't make both arguments simultaneously. Yes, I believe in property rights and they have the right to do this, but I also believe that they shouldn't censor my voice. You can hold two things in your mind, can't you? And I posted something this week because I'm so sick and tired of libertarians being black and white too. We're not supposed to be as dumb as Republicans and Democrats. You can have complex thinking where you can say, I don't agree with censorship on these platforms, but I also understand they have the right to do it. Because let's face it, these platforms are so big. There's 2 billion users on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That is a billion more people than China.
Yes.
And India and Indonesia. Like, they are in a massive company. YouTube, Google.
Accounts.
You can get to 2% of the internet because of Google. Think of the websites that you visit. You visit Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Google. You don't visit many other websites beyond those big tech company websites. Harry, you're different. You're an uber nerd, okay? But for most people, their experience are these basic platforms. They have an enormous responsibility to not let themselves censor and filter out thought. And so the message, the slow drumbeat of the last year and a half has been, we need to fix the problem at Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Well, it turns out the problem is conservatives and libertarians.
Yes.
And we're being fixed. And you should be really fucking pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not mad about it because you're so stuck in your unilateral mindset of, well, it's the right to do it, then you're seeding the ground when you should fight. Austin Peterson didn't lay down like a pussy and say, well, it's their right to do it. They can just shut off my Facebook, right? 30 days before the primary. you know, Claire McCaskill is friends with people at the tech giant Facebook. He's running against Claire McCaskill. They shut his Facebook page down because of a drawing of a gun 30 days before the election. And you know what he did? He didn't go, huh, well, you know, the Mesastian argument says, and blah, blah, blah. He said, no, this is not right. And he started making an issue out of it. And he started going, he called every person in his Rolodex. He got on Glenn Beck. He got on every single radio show he could find. He talked to Brian Nichols on our network. He went on TV shows. And he started making an issue out of it. And you know what? 2 days later, he's back on. His ban lasted less than 5 days because he made an issue out of it and said, this isn't right. And I'm not going to sit here and be a victim of liberal censorship. Because they're really loud. These censors are really loud people. And sometimes when people are really loud, you want to go, I don't want to get involved in this. I just don't think that I can fight these people because they're so loud. Meanwhile, 90% of the country is sitting there going, when is somebody going to speak for me? That's why Austin Peterson is somebody that people are gravitated to, because he says the hard things. And people go, finally, somebody's saying what I want them to say. I'm tired of being treaded upon. Like, that's what the left and the media are doing. They are taking away our ability to have intellectual conversations with each other, even knuckle-dragging conversations. Nobody hates our Facebook page more than me, because I sit there and see the dumb that is commented on our own Facebook page by our own people. I hate it. So you have to start using the power of the free market and social pressure to put change on these big companies to stop censoring us. We are libertarians, cannot exist without you fighting for our right to exist. We only exist because there is a group of people out there listening to my voice in your ears. It is incredibly important for you to become a Patreon subscriber at this moment in time, because I have a limited window of about 1 to 2 years to squeeze whatever I can out of social media to get people onto our email list, to get people onto our podcast feed, and trying to do whatever last gasp organic marketing I can do with these social platforms. Mm-hmm. Because without them, because without the ability to organically be found, we don't exist. And we're going to return at some point to the old internet, which I loved far more than I love this internet 2.0, where it's the blog role's really important. Mm-hmm. Everybody's networking together and telling you, hey, go to these blogs, check these people out. Mm-hmm. But I really need your support right now, because it is time for me to start building out email platforms and things internally in our website, things that I have neglected because I have let social media and Facebook groups and all that stuff do it for me. Well, that stuff isn't going to cut it in 2 years, and I'll tell you why. So it came out, some intrepid reporters over in England started going after this, started talking to this group called Cambridge Analytica. Cambridge Analytica is backed by the Mercers. The Mercers are the folks that funded Breitbart and bankrolled Trump, essentially, and a lot of the... They're not alt-right. They developed into the alt-right, and then the Mercers cut their support. But they are definitely traditional conservatives and very wealthy and basically like the right's George Soros. And so the left is not going to tolerate this. So... the media in England, Channel 4 with the BBC, The Observer, The Guardian, all started doing exposés. So Donald Trump hired this company called Cambridge Analytica in 2016. So this is in The Guardian, published Saturday, March 17th, 2018. Revealed 50 million Facebook profiles harvested for Cambridge Analytica in major data breach. Wasn't a data breach at all. You voluntarily gave over your information. I'll explain why. But the mere presence of the word breach means you're being lied to, because they either don't understand and so they're giving you fake news, or they are intentionally misrepresenting what this company does. The data analytics firm that worked with Donald Trump's election team in the winning Brexit campaign harvested millions of Facebook profiles of U.S. voters in one of the tech giant's biggest ever data breaches and used them to build a powerful software program to predict and influence choices at the ballot box. A whistleblower has revealed at The Observer how Cambridge Analytica, a company owned by the hedge fund billionaire Robert Mercer and headed at the time by Steve Bannon, used personal information taken without authorization in early 2014 to build a system that could profile individual U.S. voters in order to target them with personalized political advertisements. Christopher Wiley, who worked with the Cambridge University academic to obtain the data, told The Observer, "We exploited Facebook to harvest millions of people's profiles and built models to exploit what we knew about them and target their inner demons. That was the basis the entire company was founded on." Documents seen by The Observer, confirmed by a Facebook statement, show that by late 2015, the company had found out that information had been harvested on an unprecedented scale. However, at the time, it failed to alert users and took only limited steps to recover and secure the private information of more than 50 million individuals. The New York Times reports that copies of the data harvested for Cambridge Analytica could still be found online. Its reporting team had viewed some of the raw data. The data was collected through an app called This Is Your Digital Life, built by academic Alexander Kogan separately from his work at Cambridge University. Through his company Global Science Research, in collaboration with Cambridge Analytica, hundreds of thousands of users were paid to take a personality test and agreed to have their data collected for academic use. Let me reread that. Let me reread where this breach came from. Hundreds of thousands of users were paid to take a personality test and agreed to have their data collected for academic use. However, the app also collected the information of test takers' Facebook friends, leading to the accumulation of the data pool of tens of millions strong. Facebook's platform policy allowed only collection of friends' data to improve their user experience in the app, and barred it from being sold on or used for advertising. Well, that happens all the time, and Barack Obama did it, and I will explain that in a moment. So, comes only weeks after the indictment of 13 Russians by the special counsel Mueller, which stated they had used the platform to perpetrate information warfare against the United States, which, if you read it, was absolute horseshit. It is all narrative without substance. Cambridge Analytica and Facebook are one focus of an inquiry into data and politics by the British Information Commissioner's offices. So to move on in this article, on Friday, 4 days after The Observer sought comment for the story, more than 2 years after the data breach was first reported, Facebook announced that it was suspending Cambridge Analytica and Kogan from the platform, pending further investigation over the misuse of data. They maintain that they're making false and defamatory allegations. Here's what it comes down to. This is a company that built personality apps, and it's like pretty much, as far as I understand it at this point, because I've spent the last couple days looking into this. Now, I've worked with Facebook. I'm a social media marketer by trade. I have grown this business on the back of Facebook and social media in general. It's what I do at my day job, and my entire existence is how do I get you to do something by interacting with me on a social media platform. That's how I get paid. I don't get paid per click or anything like that, but my job is basically create content that you will like, that you will share with your friends, so I can get more people to engage with our platform, with our brands. And nothing is nefarious about it. It's how the entire platform exists. When you click the terms of service to join Facebook, you agree to be part of that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And when you pay nothing, you are the product. So if you're using things online for free, you are the one being sold. And if you don't get that, then please understand it, because it is the fundamental premise of these social networking sites. The way that Facebook makes money is that they hyper-target ads to your Facebook feed. Mm-hmm. And they also farm out some of this data to other people. When you log into a website using your Facebook account, you are agreeing to give that website a piece of your data. When you take one of these quizzes that says, you know, does your eye color match your birth month? Or what is your horoscope for this week? You go to that third-party app, you authorize your information, and you let that app read... What do you think that when you take those quizzes on Facebook, what do you think they're doing? Do you think that they just built that for the for fun?
So much fun and it's, shares.
Right. I'm just going to spend 20 hours building this Facebook app and get 100,000 shares because I just want people to know if their birth month is the correct one for them. Like, what Harry Potter character are you? Do you think that those are built for just out of the kindness of somebody's heart?
Yeah. Which Harry Potter house are you in?
Right. You are giving your data to someone to sell to someone else. And you're giving them access to your social graph. That's why I don't post photos of my niece. I don't mention my nieces on my big Facebook page. I've got 5,000 connections, 10,000 likes of pages. I'm in 200 groups. The amount of spread connected to that big Facebook account is ridiculous. And I'm opening up. When you become friends with another person, it's like sex. If you have sex with one person, you're having sex with everybody they had sex with. Mm-hmm. It's that same kind of like tree branching concept. You are networking yourself and networking your data together.
Yep.
And you can go into the business manager of your Facebook page and you can take a look at the people that like your page. And the amount of data set is incredible. And those third party apps take that information and they use it to make money. And so if you don't want to be part of that system, delete your Facebook account. Don't take those quizzes. Don't put any information on your profile. Don't like pages. Every single action that you ever take on Facebook is a signal to the Facebook algorithms and servers as to how to market to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that when you say something out loud, that's why I don't have an Alexa in this house. Jeff and I at work were talking the other day about a microphone, and we were talking about those blue microphones, yeah, the $20 microphones that...
The Blue Yeti ones will suck.
Not the Blue Yeti ones, but the ones that Jer uses for Boss Hog of Liberty.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, like the
those are good.
$20, they sound decent. He had his phone in his pocket, and he gets on Facebook later that day, and there's an Amazon ad for that particular microphone. Because he and I were having a conversation about what microphone to use. Now, he didn't have his phone out. His phone was in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So how did they hear the description, the detailed description that I gave of his, of that microphone to him, and then it showed up on his feed? It's because the apps that you use on your phone are listening to your conversation. Your Alexa is listening to your conversation. They're picking up social signals, behavioral signals, buying signals to figure out how to sell you a product.
Yep.
It's so far beyond, in this day and age, just putting a cookie on your browser.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a smart TV and you have it logged into the internet, if you have logged it into your IP and you're watching a TV show, and let's say you are watching an episode of NCIS on your smart TV, and you're watching it on DVR, and you get to the commercial, there is a signal sent from your smart TV during that episode that is sent to an ad server. Even if you skip the commercial for the Tide Pod that appeared in that commercial, you have triggered the ad server that will then start feeding you based on your IP address Tide commercials on your phone, on your browsers, on all the little ads boxes on the Drudge Report or whatever websites you go to. If you think that, wow, it's so weird, I mentioned this product and it started following me around on the internet. I saw this commercial and then all of a sudden Cabela's started popping up all over the internet because I saw Cabela's TV commercial. That's what's happening. You are being constantly sold. And your information is being sold to make money.
Yep.
And politicians have been using this for years, starting with Mark Penn of the Clintons, who came up with micro-targeting. And, you know, also the Bush administration 2004 targeting soccer moms.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 2000s is really when this started. But the Obama administration were the ones who really lit. So let's move on to The Guardian, go back to 2012. Same publication that we just read from with Cambridge Analytica. This is February 2012, an election year with Obama, where he's running against Mitt Romney. Barack Obama's re-election team are building a vast digital data operation that for the first time combines a unified database on millions of Americans with the power of Facebook to target individual voters to a degree never achieved before. Digital analysts predict this will be the first election cycle in which Facebook could become a dominant political force. The social media giant has grown exponentially since the last presidential election, rendering it for the first time a major campaigning tool that has the potential to transform friendship into a political weapon. Facebook is now ubiquitous, Dan Siroker said. I want to read this one quote that is in here. At the core is a single beating heart, a unified computer database that gathers and refines information on millions of committed and potential Obama voters. The databases will allow staff and volunteers at all levels of the campaign, from top strategists answering directly to Obama's campaign manager Jim Messina, to the lowliest canvasser on the doorsteps of Ohio, to unlock knowledge about individual voters and to use it to target personalized messages that they hope will mobilize voters that count most. Every time an individual volunteers to help out, for instance, by offering to host a fundraising party for the president, he or she will be asked to log on to the re-election website with their Facebook credentials. Then that will engage Facebook Connect, the digital interface that shares a user's personal information with a third party. Consciously or otherwise, the individual volunteer will be injecting all the information they store publicly on their Facebook page, home location, date of birth, interest, crucially, network of friends, directly into the Obama database outside of the Facebook account. Yep. Somewhere other than in Facebook.
It is a secure login, though. I will tell you that much.
It is a secure login, yeah.
Yeah, because they have to...
You're voluntarily giving it up.
Yeah, you're paying for a very secure login, but you could pay for other things. It's easier, but anyway, I'm sorry.
So, at one point, somewhere in this article, and I can't find it, and I'll put this in the show notes.
Yeah, but like, yeah.
Basically, what happened is they took more information than they were allowed to, given the terms of service.
Mm-hmm.
And the Obama team said, oops, sorry. And the Facebook people said, we're on the same team. Keep it.
You know? Yeah.
Like, so the Obama team, if you remember in 2012, was praised for building this amazing network in 08 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they changed the face of politics. They're geniuses. And then the Trump team does the exact same thing. The Mercers fund the exact same thing. And they're demonized for it. Steve Bannon was part of the same operation, mm-hmm. doing the same thing. It's just incredible the hypocrisy here when you look at this stuff. It's such a nothing burger, but it's a complete... it's never letting a good crisis go to waste. They are fighting, quote-unquote, propaganda by using propaganda and saying that there's something here when there isn't.
Denying strength and calling it a weakness.
Exactly right. War is peace.
Yep.
I mean, it's this is from Reason.
We're weak. We didn't do any of this.
Right.
We didn't already have this mailing list. Because that's the thing. It's like, well, Hillary didn't do this because she already had Obama's list. She had your list. Majority of the people who are like are young Democrats right now, they all have Facebook pages.
Yeah.
And a lot of them voted for Obama. So she's already got all your info deets.
You think that's why you want a LifeLock product if you're a Harry level security person. Like, the voter file for most states, the statewide voter file where mm-hmm. you register to vote, has all of the information needed to steal your identity.
Yep.
It not only has your address, your email, your phone number. In some cases, it has social security numbers and driver's licenses. You can go buy it for $5,000 here mm-hmm. in Indiana. You can go to any state and buy a voter file.
Mm-hmm.
And companies do. These companies that buy magazine subscription lists, Facebook lists, the voter file lists, they put all of this into information. If you're a business and you want to market, how do you think direct mail pieces are chosen?
Yep.
Like, this is how it works, people.
Mm-hmm. If you're wondering how you get a piece of email or something or mail list out of the blue, it's because your name is on a list or something and someone sold that list.
Right.
That's why, like, you know, like the Wheeler Libertarians is a great place to give your email list because, like, Chris is going to sell that thing. You know, I give it to other things. I only give my emails out to places I know and sell them, or I create a very weird email address that gets kicked out of a whole bunch of different systems.
I would sell your email, but I certainly would buy, like, if Reason Magazine, if I could buy Reason Magazine's email list,
ooh, yeah.
I would 100% do that. You know, like, why wouldn't I? Because that would be such a smart investment in my mm-hmm. business to grow my business.
It'd probably be a very expensive list to buy.
Sure. But wouldn't it be worth it?
Oh, heck yeah. It'd be totally returned.
Double my podcast downloads?
Very easily. Yeah.
So this is 5 Reasons Not to Feed the Russian Troll Hysteria by Jacob Sullen and Paul Detrick on March 16th.
Russia.
Yeah. The Russians intended to sow chaos and have succeeded beyond their wildest dreams, the New York Times said. But here's the 5 reasons not to believe it. Number 1, Russian trolling was a drop in the bucket. According to the indictment, Russian trolls associated with the so-called Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg spent thousands of U.S. dollars every month on social media ads, which is a minuscule fraction of online ad revenue. Facebook alone reported advertising revenue of $9.16 billion in the second quarter of 2017. That's a quarter. That's four. Four times. So that's nearly $50 billion a year. The Russians are said to be responsible for producing 43 hours of YouTube videos, but that doesn't seem like very much when you consider that 400 hours of content are uploaded to the site every minute. Number 2, Russian trolls were not very sophisticated. Russian trolls supposedly had the Machiavellian know-how to infiltrate the American political system, but their social media posts don't look very sophisticated. The post often featured broken English and puzzling topic choices. A post promoting a buff Bernie Sanders coloring book, for instance, noted the coloring is something that suits for all people. Another post showed Jesus and Satan in an arm wrestling match with the caption, "Satan, if I win, Clinton wins. Jesus, not if I can help it." The post generated very few clicks and shares. That's because authenticity works.
Yeah.
The reason most of you like this podcast is because I'm willing to share my life with you. I'm willing to be open and vulnerable with you. And the same goes for any type of content. If it looks like garbage on social media or a spam email, you don't click it. It's not effective. You can have a Russian bot pushing out a narrative on Twitter, and it can be, let's say it's 20% of all tweets sent within a 15-minute span. You know how many people are actually seeing that? None. Because all these Russian bots are networked together, but nobody actually likes them. Right. Nobody actually engages with their content because it's all bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
The fake news stuff doesn't work. Like, maybe your crazy Aunt Donna shares stuff on Facebook, but do you ever, like, look at that and go, "Oh, I believe that"?
Oh, yeah, that's the truth there. They got the truth.
Right. Like, yeah. When you see somebody share a conservative treehouse or what's the crazy lady that hates Muslims? You know what I mean? Talking about.
Whatever Aunt Donna's, the Aunt Donna lady. I've got that meme on my computer still.
But, yeah.
I think I saw one of those fake news bots today that, like, FDA admits vaccines cause autism. I'm like, really? What kind of fake news site is this?
Right. Number 3, Russian troll rallies apparently did not attract many participants. The indictment shows much of pro-Trump and anti-Clinton rallies investigated by Russian trolls, but it does not say how many people participated. The New York Times reported that a Russian-organized rally in Texas opposing Sharia law attracted a dozen people. An anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim rally in Idaho drew 4 people. All right. Libertarians, let's be honest. We've held a few rallies, haven't we? How much impact did we make when we had 4 people show up to our Tea Party rally?
Less than 7%.
Yeah. How much of the vote did we sway by having a rally with a dozen people?
All I'm saying is we are libertarians probably considered as Russian trolls as we trolled and tried to almost defend Putin, so we could, you know, we helped. We libertarians probably helped
right.
Putin's election.
Even though in 2012, if you go back, it's not 2012 because we barely existed then. It's 2013, I think. I say he's the next great dictator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were one of the first outlets to call it. Russian trolling... so was Mitt Romney, and so was Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck was excoriated for saying that he was somebody to look out for, and he's been right at every step. Yeah, crazy conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why, like, you know, maybe Russian trolls help Obama get elected twice. Yeah.
Russian trolling probably didn't change anyone's mind. Broken English aside, social media posts are not qualitatively different from content created by American activists, and they seem to be aimed mainly at reinforcing pre-existing beliefs and divisions. The Russians might have gotten a few Trump supporters to show up at anti-Clinton rallies, but that does not mean they had an impact on the election. There are so many research projects out there now that show arguing with people on Facebook or posting politics on Facebook changes absolutely no one's mind. It just only serves to reaffirm the beliefs of the people that read it.
Mm-hmm.
Russian troll hysteria depicts free speech as a kind of violence. Let me read that again. Russian troll hysteria depicts free speech as a kind of violence. The Justice Department describes the messages posted by Russians pretending to be as Americans as information warfare. There's a war on for your mind. But while the posts may have been sophomoric, inaccurate, and illogical, that does not distinguish them from most of what passes for online political discussion among actual Americans. The integrity of civic discourse does not depend on verifying the citizenship of people who participate in it. It depends on the ability to weigh what they say, checking it against our own values and information from other sources. If voters cannot do that, maybe democracy is doomed. But if so, it's not the Russians' fault. And that's so true. The second you give up your ability to think and allow other people to determine what is something that you can read or not read, listen, you know, we really do need to get a handle on these bots. We really do need to open up these social media companies to regulation. We need to get a handle on this. They're interfering in our election. Like, if they're hacking machines, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're buying Facebook ads, I don't give a shit because they're not being effective. I've done Facebook advertising. Like, if I can pay for Facebook advertising to fans of this show who are in our groups, who like our page. And you know how many people actually sign up to listen to the podcast when I do that? It's almost negligible.
30.
It's not really worth the money. The money is better putting it into things like the mobile app where people are already on a platform searching for libertarian content,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to trying to get people to become a subscriber to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And these are fans. Okay? So this is all bullshit. And so what had happened was this narrative that the left has used, to this vague narrative that Trump colluded with Russia and Hillary Clinton pushes that Russian bots lost her the election because she's unable to actually take responsibility for herself.
Mm-hmm.
They've pushed this narrative and big media picked it up. Traditional media outlets like radio, TV, newspapers, think about their financial models and the hit that they've taken in the age of the internet because of social media companies. It's been pretty rough. Classified ads don't bring in revenue. Radio revenue is actually stabilized. Radio revenue dropped, but it's stable and now slightly growing. Same TV advertising is way down because, go ahead.
Massive advertising across the board, just like that old media, and especially when any industry tries to play ball with like either the censors or like one type of demographic,
right?
Like NASCAR, they're losing Lowe's this year. They're losing all kinds of different ads. Granted, you know, NASCAR have had its issues. I have my issues and why I don't watch NASCAR a whole bunch. But, you know, the idea that I'm cleaning themselves up. And then you've got something like Amazon and Twitch that are bringing down the money because they are allowing Budweiser to control Thursday night on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, screw it. No, yeah, 21 up stream. Heck yeah, right. Bud Light, bring the ads on.
Right.
Because that's where they're you know... And so all these other places that, so Bud Light rather put money there than they are like, oh, no, can't get on TV. It's hard. But who's really watching CNN?
Hyper targeting works better than broad
Yeah.
advertising.
Yeah. because then because you can go after like, okay, the people watching Bud Light, they're probably drinking in Bud Light, watching, you know, watching like these esports stuff like that. And then it's like these pretentious people that are just claim they're watching CNN, they're drinking Bud Light, they're probably drinking a wine, and all 30 of them.
So let me continue proposing my scenario.
Sorry.
So the old media loses the revenue of advertising to Facebook, because if you're, let's say you're a car dealer here in town, or yeah, car dealer, okay, and from the 50s through the 2000s, you put money into the local newspaper and you bought advertising at the local newspaper or the local radio station or the local TV station, and it worked fine. But then the internet came along and you started doing sales funnels on Facebook and selling your branding on Facebook, hyper-targeting it. You find it's a better rate of return, so you start pulling sections of advertising. Even if you pull 25% out of those other media outlets and put it into digital, that's still a big hit for those local media outlets who are owned by big conglomerates, who are owned by shareholders, who want a return on their investment.
Mm-hmm.
Who have scared little members, scared little mice in their boardrooms, who need to return money in, so they can keep their $15 million a year salary. And so when an opportunity comes along, a business opportunity comes along, like Russian trolls and fake news, you may not directly direct your media department, your news department, to start reporting on that stuff. But you might.
Yeah, you might.
There's. I'm not saying that within editorial newsrooms there's this thinking of let's save the bottom line by destroying an unregulated competitor, but it's certainly there in the boardrooms, I guarantee it. And within the newsrooms there is groupthink like you wouldn't believe, and there's also that anger that they're no longer the thought leaders. That how is my voice equal to Alex Jones's? You think that the editor of the New York Times doesn't sit there and think, why do more people read Alex Jones than me? This is wrong. You think that they don't have a little chip on their shoulder to take Alex Jones out?
Mm-hmm.
And like Alex Jones is 50% self-promotion, 25% bat-ass crazy, and 25%, I should probably look into this and do my own homework.
And 100% alpha male.
Right. You know? And I am all like... Alex Jones does not have a hateful show. Alex Jones proposes alternative news and theories, and you can listen to it and you go, you know what? I'm gonna leave 95% of this aside, but I'm gonna do some research on this other 5%.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a white supremacist. He's not a crazy anti-Semite. Harry and I listen to him regularly enough to say that confidently.
Yep. Yeah.
So. And it's just so easy to smear these people as alt-right, hateful, right, white ring, white supremacy conspiracy theorists, blah blah blah, you know, and as a way to censor them and to carve out a way to start limiting voices so you don't have to compete with them, and then the social media companies go, oh shit, our competitors for the advertising dollar are starting to get their political friends involved and are going to use the force of government to start limiting our innovation and our bottom line. We better talk to them. What do you want? Well, you know, it'd be really helpful if to combat fake news, you gave priority to the New York Times and to the Washington Post, and you allowed us to be fact checkers, and you put us on your AMP system, Google. Google's coming out with a brand new system to produce news and help local creators of content.
It'd be also helpful if people who have hate speech or possibly alt-right doesn't get on YouTube trending, too. That'd be great, too.
Right.
And if there's any, like, fake news type of universities, I don't know, Ager... You know, type of universities.
Prager University, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, YouTube wants to have conspiracy documentaries on their platform because those are so well watched. Time spent watching is huge on those conspiracy channels.
Yep. Yeah. There's some really cool ones. So if you'd like to look into, if you're looking for a good time, I say crack open a a gigantic bag and a box of wine for the big head scientist stuff.
Right.
If you really want to get woke.
So they all see an opportunity to start going after their competitor in the news in the news business and the ad business, and to limit other voices, to return to a time when they were supreme in thought control and in controlling of your dollar. And they're going to start using the force of government to regulate their competitor. And the days of bending over backwards to please politicians and their big media partners should be over for people like Twitter, Facebook. And that, because the assassination, the long knives are out for these companies, and it's game over. And you know what the consequence is going to be? Is they're going to make it harder to advertise. Mm-hmm. They're going to make it harder to publish. They've already made it harder to be seen on the platform. They are going to just continue to sanitize the platform to the point that you're only going to see your boomer aunt's photos of her stitching. Like, they already did this experiment, which we talked to you about earlier this year, where they tried to put pages into a separate tab. Well, that failed because people realized that their family and friends aren't as interesting as professional content creators.
Right.
You would rather see my opinion on politics, a person who works at trying to have an opinion that is original, mm-hmm. and has 15 years of experience in crafting it. You'd rather see my opinion on the We Are Libertarians page than you would your aunt's, who spent no time thinking about it.
Yep.
So that experiment failed, but they're going to do it anyways. You're going to have a complete sanitization of the product that is going to lead to people fleeing the platforms. You're already seeing Facebook, for the first time, according to this Edison research, dropped in usage for the first time in its existence in the last year. And so less eyeballs on the platform means less engagement, means less advertising dollars, means less resources, means the company's out of business in 10 years. So I didn't think that there would ever be a time. I mean, I used to sit there and think, how can a company as big and as powerful as Facebook really have the ability to go out of business? And I think we're there. And I think that the left, with their effort to censor out conservative ideas, managed to kill the golden goose of free speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're actively censoring conservatives, libertarians, right-leaning thought, but not liberal thought.
Right. And the other thing is with it is that conservative thought, libertarians, they're almost, since they're getting attacked first, they're seeing the writing on the wall.
Right.
They're already creating systems like, like Ian Freeman, Free Talk Live, never stop LRN.FM, keeps it growing, keeps it out there because, yeah, you can get your podcast, your video out there on any other stream, on the other platforms, but, you know, eventually they'll take them back down and you need a way to find Liberty Podcast. Hey, I'm going to keep this stream out here just raking on RSS feed, which is a protocol and not knowing its platform.
Right.
There's all kinds of, there's other ones out there that I'm sure a lot of you guys subscribe to that they just saw the writing on the wall and like, you know what, I'm out. You know, I'm going to still do stuff on these, like just like Wheeler Terms, we're still going to do stuff on these free platforms, but it's like, you know what, you know, eventually we're going to get blocked off here. You know,
yeah.
We haven't been hit for some of the libertarian and conservative talk on YouTube that we're still able to stream. We've got no strikes on our channel and stuff like that, but they did take out the monetization that was on this channel.
Yeah, and I just turned monetization off for everything because I don't want them running ads. If they're not going to share the revenue of the advertising that is on our Facebook page, I don't want you running ads on my, and they still do.
Yeah.
Which sucks, but
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. You know, just like, we live stream, you know, and that's why we've got, you know, we got the Twitch live stream just in case, you know, backup places like that. And even that, we've got the hidden emergency VPS backup that, you know, in a moment's notice, we'll hit a switch that there. And guess what? Hey, it's our server. You know, we'll just use the email list to direct people to this server. Like, hey, you want to watch a live stream video? Yeah, it's our own server. How about that? How about the memples? You know, but because there's one lucky thing that since we are being targeted first, we are seeing the writing on the wall. So when they finally do get chipped away and they put their foot, you know, they are shooting themselves and they're actively in their foot, you know,
they're participating in shedding 50% of the country.
Yeah. Which, yeah, and they, you know, and because everyone is tired. Like, I remember, like, I binge watched Jessica Jones and a lot of different of these, like, Marvel shows, and they freaking make fun and laugh of flyover country. I'm like, listen, you know, New York City is a small little city. Yeah, I get it that most Marvel stuff happens there, but, like, come on. Come on. Stop making fun of flyover country. So, this is the majority of the, you know, this is the majority. Us together beat you.
Right. So, I mean, the writing on the wall was when Zuckerberg met with conservatives a few years ago when they found out that they were putting on that sidebar in the news section.
Mm-hmm.
They were not putting conservative news in there.
Yep.
They were actively, and they've just, instead of like keeping the promise to not do that anymore, they've doubled down on it. And these companies, in my estimation, they're, according to the non-aggression principle, you can't defraud people and lie to people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting to a point where these companies are saying they're treating everyone equally when they're not.
Yeah, when it's a lie.
And it's easy to track when they're not doing that. And there's a site called the Western Journal, which I'm not crazy about their reputation, so take this for what it's worth. Confirmed, Facebook's recent algorithm change is crushing conservative sites, boosting liberals. And you see this on like Google. When you Google the Daily Wire, you see Snopes fact checking applied to the Daily Wire, which is run by Ben Shapiro, who is a never Trumper. And the Daily Wire content is not Alex Jones.
Super mild.
And to treat them like Alex Jones is ridiculous because they're Weekly Standard, National Review conservatives. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not fringe people.
By no means. There's like, it's almost like a barometer of like the right, just to look at it. Like, okay, where is the, you know, those not so far right but right people are at? Where are they at?
Right. So you've got this report from the Western Journal that we'll look through together here. Facebook's much publicized demotion of publishers' content and users' feeds has negatively impacted conservative leaning publishers significantly more than liberal-leaning outlets. Liberal publishers have gained about 2% more web traffic from Facebook than they were getting prior to the algorithm changes implemented in early February. On the other hand, conservative publishers have lost an average of nearly 14% of their traffic from Facebook. 14% loss for conservative sites, 2% gain for liberal sites. This algorithm change, intentional or not, has in effect censored conservative viewpoints on the largest social media platform in the world. This change has ramifications that in the short term are causing conservative publishers to downsize or fold up completely, and in the long term could swing elections in the U.S. and around the world. So because we are libertarians, what you have is their business model is based on web traffic and basically impressions and clicks on banner ads. And also, the less people going to your website, the less that they see your subscription model or other content. And so when you don't have people consuming your content because they don't see it, your business dries up. My business model is essentially built on building community, because I believe that the way to survive in the next era of media is to network people together of a like mind, say to them, we're all in this together because we are, and then say, if you support the people organizing us together, you like the information that you get, you like the products that we give you, support us by donating monthly through the subscription service, buy our products, buy stuff in our store, and not so much of an ad revenue model, but more of a community-based model. And that's where I think media is going. Mm-hmm. I think you see that in like Budweiser going to Twitch.
Right.
They're saying, I'm going to a specific niche, and I'm going to spend my money on this specific niche because I'm going to get a better return because these people are passionate about this brand.
Right.
You know, and the tides of the world don't inspire you to get involved in their brand as much as a We Are Libertarians does.
Yeah.
Because we are people, we're vulnerable, we're a real tangible thing as opposed to like a utilitarian tool like a detergent.
And you're right. And the good thing is that this is what Spangle does, like, for a living. This is what, like, he nerds out about, is all this whole keeping his pulse on all this stuff is going on. Like, the idea of a legal liberty podcasters, the idea of grouping up with other podcasters, like, if you like our podcast, you would like this group. You would like some of these people here. The idea of starting that group now while you can still connect and grow with other people, be able to find people, that network, that groundwork's here now. So when something does happen, it's like, okay, now the league just grows.
So this is interesting. I just went to tweet this out, and I had kind of heard rumblings that this was happening. So I used Buffer to tweet things out. And I was trying to push out this study to the We Are Libertarians Twitter, the Wall Politics Twitter, and the Chris Spangle Twitter. Due to recent changes, this is what Buffer is saying to me, which is like Hootsuite. It's a third-party app that publishes to multi-platforms.
Love Buffer.
They say, excuse me, due to recent changes with Twitter, you're only able to post to one Twitter profile at a time, so you are only posting to We Are Libertarians. In February 2018, Twitter announced new guidelines to prevent people from misusing multiple accounts to artificially amplify a message. One of the key takeaways from the announcement was do not allow your users to simultaneously post identical or substantially similar content to multiple accounts. For example, your service should not permit a user to select several accounts they control from which to publish a tweet. Buffer says, this means third-party services like Buffer are no longer permitted to enable users to share the same post to multiple Twitter accounts at one time. They also shared a deadline of March 23rd to bring third-party apps into compliance with these rules. From March 23rd, 2018, you will only be able to schedule content to one Twitter account at a time. You will still be able to schedule multiple content to Twitter accounts with one Buffer account, just not the same message to multiple Twitter accounts simultaneously. So obviously a way to stop the bots from spamming the platform. But the audience of We Are Libertarians and my audience on my personal Twitter, I'm not a bot. I'm not spamming the platform. It's two completely different audiences. This is...
How does it stop a bot? How? Because I can easily write a program to go past that. That's super easy. I can push a thing to Buffer. I can set up a Trello page to accept, to copy all tweets that are coming from a different Twitter page, and then push it from a different Buffer account.
Right.
That's easy. I was like, what about IP address? That's super easy too. I can have multiple IP. My VPS has multiple IP addresses. That's super easy.
Yeah, so they basically just killed Buffer and Hootsuite and all these. And these people who run multiple corporate accounts, like, this is bullshit.
Oh, yeah, that's going to suck.
This is... Do you realize how much harder this makes my job? I'm being punished because of...
Bad actors
who have no impact on the platform in the first place.
None whatsoever.
Like, find the person who, like, you have to be sophisticated enough if you're Twitter to go, okay, this one tweet was posted 23 times at the same moment.
Mm-hmm.
How do...
you might as well go to work tomorrow and decide to buy, like, just five, like, have a laptop per account and just have it behind your desk.
Yeah.
And just turn around. This is my blank account. This is my other account. What did you just, so I can make the tweet here and then take it, just turn my desk around and hit it five different times.
All right. So
they do nothing but tweet. These five laptops sit here and just tweet. That's all they do.
All right. So looks like you've posted that one recently. Let's see if I can post it here.
Probably not. We're doing this live.
We're doing it live. Yep. Can't add it there.
Oh.
Buffer's not allowing me to share it at all.
Yep.
Wow. This is really something. So anyways, back to the Western Journal.
Which sucks because
example.
Like, yeah, Buffer was gonna was my, you know, my thing that I have that, you know, if I ever go off the grid so I can keep posting for several days.
So New York Times versus the New York Daily News, case in point, two rival publishers in New York City, the Post and the Daily News, are similar in many ways except for their editorial slants. The Post is well known as a right-leaning outlet, whereas the Daily News has an established left-leaning slant. For example, the Daily News recently ran a headline after the Parkland shooting that read, "Brave Florida survivors plan day of action for gun sanity and to call out blood on hands of NRA puppets." Headlines like that garnered the Daily News a 24.18% increase in traffic from Facebook, while the right-leaning Post traffic dropped 11% in the same time period. let's see how they got this data. To conduct this evaluation, the Western Journal selected 50 publishers known to receive a significant amount of online traffic from Facebook. These publishers included traditional print or television outlets. The Western Journal then assigned to each publisher a number between 0 and 100 based on a media bias fact check news site, a third-party website that analyzes publishers for political bias and places them on a continuum. The Western Journal checked the monthly Facebook traffic for each of these sources using data from global digital marketing intelligence company SimilarWeb and compared January traffic from February 4th through March 3rd, adjusted slightly for a shorter time period. So conservative publishers have been negatively impacted. The 25 on the liberal scale averaged a 1.8% increase in boosted traffic from Facebook, whereas the 25 on the conservative side had a 13.17% decrease on the other side. So it's just censorship, plain and simple. Yep. It is disappointing, but not surprising, I guess.
Yeah, and it's going to cause like these platforms to finally slip. And that's the one thing that was going to cause a slip, because the one thing that Facebook did it over MySpace is, one, easy use, and the simple fact that, you know, it didn't feature too much crap.
Right.
Yeah, MySpace was starting to do. It was feeding you all kinds of these ad crap and all this other crap that no one wanted, and so people jumped over to Facebook.
Right.
And also Facebook had this exclusivity. But now that it's so easy for people to create their own little zones and pods for everything else, and BBSs are easy to create for people, or people jump into their own Discord servers, or they're just going to stay inside their Facebook groups, until long enough that they, finally just leave the platform, or some other platform get created to ever outside Facebook, possibly. I don't know. We'll see what 10 years makes.
Right. You know what you're doing? You're further siloing people, which has been the entire problem. And this is always what happens with censorship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you start to have people go, oh, you're biased against me, I'll create my own thing,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just silo myself off with my own people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you get radicalization.
Yep.
Because then people stop talking to each other. And it's not like the Facebook conversations that we were having were good anyways.
No.
You know, I'd rather you just remove all politics from the platform altogether. Like, don't censor one side versus the other. Just remove all politics.
Yeah.
Like, if it's political, it doesn't belong here.
Yeah.
And then let things like a buddy of mine started a company called Roust, and it was a political social network. It didn't take off because everybody was on Facebook. Well, it was about 2 years too early, because now everybody would use Roust, mm-hmm. So it just is really gross.
Yep. I'm sure that when LinkedIn saw this all happen, they probably were like, woohoo!
Right.
Because, people are probably going to go to other platforms, but but LinkedIn is probably going to get more, hey, this is the professional social network platform, the actual network with family and people needing your mentor community, and then you can go and, shit post in other platforms.
Right.
And that's the other thing, is because Facebook was also unique, because on BBS boards, you were on your silo. When you go to a BBS board, hey, this BBS is just for, we're just going to talk about Hunt of the Reckoning, or we're talking about Vampire the Masquerade of this game, or, hey, we're just talking about rotaries, we're just talking about Raspberry Pis in this board, no politics, we're just talking about this.
Right.
Facebook was very different and unique, because it was just what anyone was talking about.
Right.
When it comes to, now there were some Usenets, some IRC chats and stuff like that, but, this idea of, but the thought that it's going to get backed up and moved into something else, depending on it, I'm actually kind of giddy. I actually like the idea. Because it goes back to the internet, my internet, and get rid of some of these people that don't, that I feel they don't belong on the internet.
Yeah.
Some of y'all don't. So many people that don't have the mental fortitude to be on the net, and I'm freaking tired of it.
Yeah. I just.
Glad they're gone.
I'm of the same mindset. I just want to be around my people. And that's why I really enjoy the Facebook groups, except for one person in there lately who is a leftist who's trolling our group. But
are they really trolling? Come on.
I'm looking at it going, okay, do I want to put my community in the hands of anyone? Do I want to start a forum on WeAreLibertarians.com and invite people there into my house and we build our own mod? But the problem with that is it's really hard to get people to leave something they're addicted to, which is Facebook.
Yeah.
And so from a media perspective, from a business perspective, from a a right-leaning media outlet perspective, I'm having a tough time figuring out how to position my business moving forward to continue organic growth. Like, iTunes is where most people find us. They search libertarian in iTunes, and that's how most people find us.
Mm-hmm.
But to continue this awesome community that we have, I've got to continue. Like, it's not like I can stop posting on Facebook because I still get a lot of traffic from it.
Yeah,
we have a big presence of 87,000 people on our Facebook page. We invested a ton of our time and resources to get people to like the Facebook page, join Facebook groups, and it's like,
now it's all, yeah.
Why did I spend my time and my energy promoting somebody else's stuff?
Yep.
You know, and because they clearly don't give a shit about my beliefs. They don't want my business. So why am I continuing to give them my business? But I'm also stuck in that if I create my own thing, those of you listening may not get engaged with it. You'll join, you'll get an account, but then you won't be active there. And then everybody goes, there's nothing going on here.
Yeah.
You know? Unless you get a group of people who are committed to making it, like Discord has really taken off. We've got 150 people in there. They've made it their own.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all these different Facebook groups.
Which is Discord for Facebook.
Which basically. Is Discord for boomers, yeah. As Harry put it.
Which I actually thought about, like some of us in the mods and stuff like that in the Discord, I've tossed around the idea of blocking off some of the Discord until you get up to high enough level or you ask for it. So you only see the starter safe zone. That's all you see. And Duck Hunt. That's it. That's all you see. You see Duck Hunt and the starter safe zone.
I need to talk
zone.
To you about Duck Hunt, okay? Because there is... you've been ignoring me, and I'm unhappy about it. I'm glad you brought this up, because we need to have a conversation. A public apology is owed to not only myself, but Rick and Christy and Brantley. So
Chromebook's broken now.
Duck Hunt is fun, okay? In the Discord channel, there is a Duck Hunt where we play with each... It's a game, okay?
Like the old Mud or Chet style game, the old like BBS game and stuff like that in the chat rooms.
But we've lost the ability to see who is on top. The leaderboard feature has somehow either been disabled or is broken. And so nobody wants to play it because nobody can see who's winning or losing. I need to know if you've done this.
First off, I did not do this.
Okay, I believe you.
I do know that the Duck Hunt has gone through a massive update last week.
Yes, that's we know.
And that's the other reason why I was like, I was updating, do all these updates. Well, time to ignore this channel until the updates get finished and hopefully the bugs will block out.
I have personally messaged you, to which you have not replied, which is not how you treat dear leader.
Oh, did you message me?
I did, and I'm wagging my finger at you.
I don't even see that on here.
You're getting a wagging of the finger.
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay.
That's the finger.
First, I need an apology for ignoring me.
I like to deeply and apologize that...
No. Apologize.
I did. I said I didn't apologize that about the Duck Hunt and ignoring you.
It's not even the... All you had to say was, they upgraded, it's broken, here's what it is.
There are some cool new features.
I can't do anything for you, but don't ignore me.
I didn't ignore you.
Listen,
didn't see your email.
I die. All of this is yours. I need to know that I can trust you. And so when I ask you a question, I need a response. You're number two around here.
Well, I am sorry.
This is not how
apologize.
This is not how deputy leader should act.
That I did... I somehow may have missed your communication on the 18th.
Lying.
I just somehow, it must have slipped through the cracks of all the other
Christy Avery. Christy Avery has asked you about it. She is a $100 a month subscriber to this outfit. She demands answers. We do not ignore Christy Avery.
I did get somebody that did plan, that did want to be, wanted to take your admin rights and run as Duxar.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new member inside the Discord. They said they would gladly become the new Duxar and have admin rights and go into the chat program and do all the code stuff that they don't want to do for me.
Well, they can share that with me.
Yeah, because... that's what czars do usually. Czars usually don't share.
No. I am the czar. Here's the thing that everybody in Discord needs to understand. I am in charge. This is We Are Libertarians. This is my universe. I am dear leader. Look at me. Look at me. I'm dear leader now.
I really think that, according to the Discord, Christie's over you, actually.
I'm no. That's because she's horny. She's going to kill me. In about 2 minutes when the YouTube chat.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a lot of things are getting fixed in the Duck Hunt. It should be all the bugs and everything. The guy promises it should be done by this Saturday.
Okay.
It should be fixed. If it is still busted, I do know that I did tested it out and did a new install on a different Discord server, and it does work, but for some reason ours don't. So I emailed him about that. Okay. But like, since we don't pay him, he'll move as fast as he wants to move.
That's exactly right. Yeah. All we needed to know was that our beloved game may one day be the same
it will
as it was.
Be this made a whole again one day.
And so everybody loves that I'm the admin of of Duck Hunt because I can spawn ducks. They do.
Do they?
They do.
I actually have gotten a lot of what some would call complaints, but well, no one complains in the kingdom.
That's because Rick Irvine takes it way too seriously.
I do get some complaints that you spawn ducks for yourself.
No, only occasionally. But if you look at the leaderboard, I guarantee I'm like sixth.
But what I would try to remind them that it is your kingdom and it's your ducks that they have the permission to shoot.
Of course. When I'm spawning ducks, I'm mm-hmm. spawning like eight in a row.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the ability to type bang. Like,
that's what you till you get interns, right?
Honestly, like Rick and Brantley are so quick at it that mm-hmm. I can't even kill my own ducks.
Is that what's going to happen when you get interns this year? You're just going to make them duck hunt for you? Log in under this.
If I really cared about winning, I would just give myself all the points. Like, I would just make myself on top.
It is a lot of fun to do that, by the way. I just want you to know that. It is a lot of fun to be number one.
It is. Michael Schulteis, I made him number one one day, and then he logged in. He's like, holy, what happened?
I'm number one!
It's funny. So it's a lot of fun, and it's a fun way to, like, just game and you know.
And there's other games that I can get. Like, if you guys are also out there and you know of other Discord fun game bots like that, just tell me, like, that the Duck Hunt one was a recommendation. Someone recommended, like, hey, man, we got this Duck Hunt in this other Discord. You know, I tried it. I was like, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I didn't know if anyone wanted it. And I only put it in because things were messing up. Mr. Mises was messing up on the rank thing. And I added it, and apparently it's made a huge hit. So.
All right, so final article, because we got to wrap up. We didn't get to half of what we wanted to, but that's why we have multiple shows. Yeah. Commentary. What if Trump is right and there's no collusion? This was in CBS News on their commentary page. On Sunday morning, President Trump wondered in a tweet, what does Mueller team have 13 hardened Democrats, some big crooked Hillary supporters, and zero Republicans? Another Dem recently added, why does anyone think this is fair and yet there's no collusion? What if Donald Trump is right? What if there's really no collusion? In one sense, the question is irrelevant. Paul Manafort's getting 305 years in jail. General Mike Flynn has been found out. Papadopoulos have been indicted. Mueller could essentially issue stacks of indictments whether Trump's campaign colluded with Russia or not. But for more than a year now, Democrats in Congress like Adam Schiff and liberal media outlets have promised Americans proof that Trump colluded with Russia to steal the 2016 election using hackers and propaganda. As one far left activist put it, back in October, Ezra Klein at Vox.com said, it's almost impossible to believe that there wasn't collusion between Trump's operation and Russia. Even now, two out of three Democrats still believe Russia actually tampered with the polls to steal the election from Hillary Clinton. With Trump declared guilty by the Democrats and all but convicted in the press, what happens if Mueller confirms the findings of the Republican-controlled House Intelligence Committee that there's plenty of Trump campaign incompetence, but no collusion? For people who hate or love Trump, it won't matter. They've already made up their minds. But for the majority of casually politically Americans who already think Washington politicians are worse than lawyers and used car salesmen when it comes to very low ethical standards, that is an attack on Nick Sarwark, who is both a lawyer and a used car salesman. And when it comes to very low ethical standards, what will conclude if they're told that the whole point of the investigation from the beginning was based on a baseless charge? Many are likely to think that if there was no collusion, then the entire story really was the witch hunt President Trump keeps telling them it is. He will have turned out to be right, no matter how many other things he did wrong. I believe that is the reason Trump stepped out on his own good news about the McCabe firing. why he didn't do what many, myself included, considered the smart move. Let the McCabe firing speak for itself. Then he had a wild weekend. Won't read his tweets. You can go look at it. Trump sent out this just as the Russia story hit a profound and pro-Trump moment. Andrew McCabe, whose wife really did get $675,000 in combined donations from a PAC controlled by Clinton ally Terry McAuliffe and from the Virginia Democratic Party, which was also associated with McAuliffe, probably should have recused himself from any Clinton-related investigations. But he was fired, not by Donald Trump, but at the recommendation of the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility. The head of that office is Candace Will, who was given the job in 2004 by then-FBI Director Robert Mueller. The OPR reportedly acted on allegations that McCabe showed a lack of candor. Is there a nicer way to say liar than that? Uncovered by the Inspector General Michael Horowitz, who was appointed by Barack Obama. For everyone other than fringe conspiracy theorists, how dare you, the evidence of McCabe's bad behavior is indisputable. Even Representative Schiff, the tip of the Democrats' partisan spear on Russia, concluded Sunday that McCabe's firing may have been justified. That should have been the headline. Instead, Trump tweeted and took it away. As national security reporter Eli Lake put it at Bloomberg, McCabe's firing wasn't political until Trump made it political. Once again, I tend to agree with Lake and others who think Trump's missing the mark by making the story anything other than the Democrat insight at the FBI fired for fouling up Trump-related investigation. Focus now turns to other partisan actors in the FBI. There's a direct line from McCabe to Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Bruce Ohr, all of whom are anti-Trump partisans and engaged in behavior that raises legitimate questions about their trustworthiness. And that extends to the trustworthiness of the Obama FBI that sought a questionable warrant to spy on Trump, based largely on information from Hillary Clinton's campaign. Trump appears to be acting on assumption that collusion is his silver bullet. Keep everyone focused on that question so that when the verdict comes back innocent of collusion, Trump can declare himself not guilty of any other charge by default. After all, if the collusion allegation was bogus, isn't the entire investigation? That's Trump's case. And it's likely to make sense to the vast majority of Americans who've been promised a collusion story that Trump's enemies can't deliver.
Yep.
Perfectly summed all of it up.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it's setting it up so the investigation will go through most of his presidency.
Yep.
To help out, you know, like to mostly tie it like a albatross around the Democrats' neck for each election.
Yep.
Oh, they talk about the Benghazi witch hunt where soldiers die, but they keep going off of this witch hunt right here.
Yep.
You know, it's going to throw it right in their face. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you get emails. Yep. Conclusion, you know, conclusion, which you're, you know, like,
right.
Oh, look, you know. It's like, you know, granted, saying like just because one side did it, the other is like, no, it's a great move to just cancel it out. That like, well, what about our emails? Well, what about the new Russian collusion?
So much whataboutism.
Yeah. But the thing is that when you come to Democrats, it's like, well, why aren't you mad at your own party when you found out that, you know, Hillary should have been the candidate? She lost the primary. She lost it. She didn't almost lose. She did lose it.
She lost it.
She shouldn't have been, and there's all these other, and there's also these very vague breaking of rules for debates. This seems like this should be this is where you should be focusing on, not the guy who are you want. You could, you know, go ahead, get someone, work on someone, and beat them in the next election. Why are you focusing so hard right here then?
Right.
You know, you're just ignoring it. Now, can you look at two things at the same time? Sure, but I just don't feel that you're looking at the other.
All right, so we need to start wrapping up. Go ahead. You start.
With this whole Russia thing. Russia! But it keeps popping up into all the feeds, and I think when this whole nerve agent attack thing finally gets all wrapped up, we find out what the real heck is going on. All I know, it's a very scary world out there with if Russia really did this nerve agent attack, and with the the CIA being shaken up and bringing up someone who's like, you know, culpable and torture, so that's old school people being brought up and these old boomers are still alive. It's like the 80s again right now, and I'm thinking about bringing out the get my Ferrari and my white suit back up and
right,
you know, and getting everything ready, get ahead of the curve. other than that, I'll get a shout out to like, I'm probably going to more Russia stuff tomorrow or Low Key Wall. I've got some other stories that Escalaja gave us out there, so we'll probably talk about a lot of those. Friday, hey, I'm healthy again, so Liberty Chill at Triton again. I'll be back out there. I will probably, I'll be there. We'll probably IRL stream if I can get some tea time. Also, when it comes to getting out there, going the other candidates, I want you to say that Paul Copeland has taken that process out of my hands, and he's became the new – he's process-owning, and he's owning the new process. He did a lot of good work 2 weeks ago before I got whole sick, and he's done a lot of work, and he's done some really good work on it.
He has, and I've emailed everybody that's emailed me about starting a Liberty Chill in – Liberty and Chill in their area. And we'll be back with you soon. And, excited to get that off the ground. We've got a lot of cool things going on, and we want you to be a part of it. We not only build this because we love doing it. Like, the reason we do this podcast is that we enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoy talking with each other and hanging out and, like, having – it's the glue of our friendship group.
Yep.
The second reason we love doing it is because we get to talk to listeners, and mm-hmm. we get to become friends with you guys. Mm-hmm. And it has enriched both of our lives – because we've been able to befriend so many of you listeners. So don't be shy. Join the Facebook groups. Don't join the Discord channels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's pal around a little bit.
Yeah. If you guys see me in the like in a chat room and we're talking away, do not be shy. Jump in the voice chat. Come talk to us.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to say anything, you want to inject a few words. We had several different people. I'm not going to say their names here on the podcast. I don't know if they're, you know.
Paul Copeland.
Up and up, not Paul.
Christy Avery.
Not Christy. Yeah, Christy has not jumped in voice chat, but, you know, one of these days I'm going to, I got this really cool project for Christy, but I've got to get it out there to, I got to get my camera set up so I can actually show her how to build what I'm trying to tell her to build so she can have better Wi-Fi while she's at work.
Right.
Because she has crap Wi-Fi out there. I want to be able to stream. She needs to be able to stream HD out there. But if you guys see me out there, even if you didn't inject one word or you just want to sit there and listen to us as like, because I'm not going to lie, Niece, Reinhold and I, we're on there at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll just go on a subject from time for like 4 hours. It's like, oh, crap, the sun's coming up.
Oh,
you know?
Niece.
Or we'll just hit some topic. Like I said, like there's one night that, you know, Niece and I talked about, you know, Nebraska and Nebraska politics for like 5 hours. Even after he ranted on here, he went another 5 hours, okay? So, you know, it's, I guess, the Discord is really cool because, like, it's also a good place because if you are having a conversation with someone in the Discord and you don't like typing out this conversation, tell them to jump in the voice chat. You can talk. You can even use the phone. If you're on the phone app, you can use the microphone on the phone and the speakers on there. And that's what Stone does. Stone jumps in all the time.
Right.
Of course, like, you know, it's like sometimes I think his friends are being boring, so he wants to go talk with us instead. Oh, we know we're your real friends, Stone. We're your real friends. But yeah, the other thing with Liberty and Chills and stuff like that is I also like to win other listeners who don't know each other, meet each other, find, you know, they have that thing in common with the show and they end up becoming friends. That's also really cool stuff that happens at Liberty and Chill.
Yeah. We all know you're lonely. You Come know, on. We're lonely too. Let's be pals.
I love it when I like end up getting up, going to the bathroom, and I coming back and the other table has taken the conversation somewhere else while I have been gone. And it's like, wow, you guys don't really need me here. You know, but it's awesome. I love it. It's also that whole community aspect. I also know that you're not alone too out there in the world screaming right into a microphone.
I have launched a war on boomers, as you all know, and we had a large skirmish last night. We were going to do this as a topic, but it's too big and too complicated.
Boomers.
So, as you know, we have a great podcast called The Boss Hog of Liberty. And it is run by Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis and Cade Coger. They were on last week. There is a statue, a doughboy statue, a World War I soldier statue. It's like in the park and it's kind of offset in the woods. It's been vandalized. The lights don't work. And so two nonprofits raised money to relocate this statue and build a veterans museum. Well, the boomers in town have lost their mind, and they are going crazy about it, and they are screeching. They had signs professionally printed because this isn't what the veterans would have wanted. They placed it there for a reason, and if we move it, it's disrespecting veterans. Okay, they're moving it in the same park, and they're adding like a full display. It's mm-hmm. not just like a statue in the woods now. It's going to get its like concrete all around it and flags and like it's going to be
respect.
Right. And they raised, there's a small amount of grant money, but most of it was privately raised. It's been this spearheaded project by this one person.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have thought that they were tearing down the statue and destroying it the way that these people were carrying on last night. And so I posted a photo of them and basically said, this is real boomer behavior. Like, do you not have poor people in your town that you can feed and clothe? Do you not have victims of domestic violence that you can save? Are there not sex slaves that you can rescue from trafficking in your town?
Meth, like, heroin.
Do the police in your department need things? Do they need money raised? Like, those are real issues. The moving of a statue is not an issue. And only baby boomers have enough time to sit there and fight City Hall over the movement of a statue 500 feet or whatever it is. Like, millennials are too busy trying to clean up the mess of baby boomers. Gen mm-hmm. Xers are too busy trying to not be forgotten to give a shit about the moving of a statue. Like, it's one thing if you're disrespecting history by tearing down and destroying the statue, and that's not what they're doing. And you would have thought that I had said that we should genocide baby boomers. I did, but that was besides the point.
It's beside the point.
I backtracked a little bit. I walked that back after Tanner came in. Tanner Purdue went a little too hard in the paint on the post, and he
like Tanner.
He was like, you know, we need to destroy them. We need to kill every baby boomer. I said, no.
Burn it if we have to.
Let's just round these people up and deport them because they're not participating in their society.
All I'm saying is put them in some sort of camp.
Yes. Exactly right. Old camp.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to read through the post, it's pretty funny, and they really take me to task. And some of the boomer anger is very funny. I'll put it in the show notes. You can go and like that. And we'll have full coverage of the Doughboy taking place and the boomer arguments and my nuking of Newcastle
mm-hmm.
on the Boss Hog of Liberty. I will not be there, but they will be talking about it. So make sure you check that out Thursday night after you've watched the live stream of We Are Libertarians. Still don't know why they've chosen to compete against us, Harry, but it's Boss Hog. He does what he wants.
He does what he wants. You know, he's got high hopes, so.
Probably save $10 a year on hosting by streaming on Thursday night.
Knowing Boss Hog, he probably found that out. He's like, wait a minute.
You know why Jeremiah and Sarah went to New York City?
Why?
Because they heard there was a nickel on the ground. Very good. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Brandon Luke, Christy Avery, Jason Doolittle, and Craig DaCosta for being our $100 a month subscribers. You guys are awesome. And again, please support the show financially. I'm going to be more direct about asking that because now is the time that we need your support. We're going to see the dwindling. We've already seen the dwindling organic growth, but we need to build systems that are going to support our community on our own platforms instead of driving people to other places. So, and that takes resources. That takes, you know, $100 software here or a $500 license here or an added hosting bill here. So every dollar that you send me, I end up spending on We Are Libertarians. I spend way too much on all this, but that's what happens when you're trying to build your dream. So thank you for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. Harry, thank you for being here. Nice to see you again. I missed you.
Missed you too. It's been too long.
All right. Well, now get out. All right. Thanks. We'll see you. We'll see you all. I am interviewing apparently there's a new social network out there called Minds.com and Minds as in your brain. And I know my Hoosier accent says MINZ.com, but it's M-I-N-Z.
Minds. So you're finally making a Minds account?
So I'm going to go check that out. I'm interviewing the founder of that tomorrow, and that will be Thursday's show. And we're just going to talk a lot about what we talked about tonight, and I'm going to talk to somebody who's trying to solve that problem. So, all right, thanks for joining us here on this episode of We Are Libertarians. We love you, and we will see you on Friday.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.